You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Now that you've survived Christmas and Hanukkah with your finances noticeably depleted, there's still one more holiday at hand, New Year's, the eve and the day. So what to do? Well, we've invited Roseanne Gold to the rescue. The four-time James Beard Award winner has 11 cookbooks under her apron, and the title alone of her latest, Radically Simple, is quite reassuring. Radically Simple is out from Rodale, and I'm delighted to welcome Roseanne Gold back to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Great to be here.
And I gather this this cookbook has been selected one of the best of all time by Cooking Light magazine.
Yeah, that was really a surprise in the November issue of Cooking Light magazine. They're doing a roundup of the 100 best cookbooks of the last 25 years, and I really was so delighted that Radically Simple was chosen as one of them, one of the best general cookbooks.
It's great that New Year's is a holiday that doesn't involve gifts. But it does have a lot of sparkle to it, despite being in the dark of winter. Do you like New Year's, Roseanne?
Well, it's funny. It actually does involve gifts in my house because it's my birthday.
Ah.
January 1st. I think
you
I
really
was
born
at 1:30 in the morning. Yeah. And if it was any place other than New York City, I might have been the first baby. I was probably, I don't know, like the 10,000th.
You would have been in the newspaper in another town.
Exactly, in a small town. But so I actually have mixed feelings about New Year's. You know, I feel like everyone's celebrating, but not my birthday. But it is a festive time, and I do like it. Every year, it's a little bit different, though. I don't really have many traditions, but I'm trying
Your
to
family
start...
didn't have traditions?
Not really. You know, at one point, we used to own and operate a couple of really fancy restaurants, and very often New Year's Eve would be at the Rainbow Room or Windows on the World.
You and your husband.
Yes. Michael Whiteman was Joe Bama's partner, and they created these great extravaganzas in the sky, and we were often there for New Year's celebrations.
Well, the Rainbow Room, of course, there was dancing as well to a full orchestra.
That's right.
A ballroom as well as a wonderful restaurant.
And often I was in the kitchen, you know, making sure the food was right. But those were really wonderful places to be. And really sorely missed, Leonard, right? There's not anything left really in New York that has that kind of old-fashioned sparkle and charm, especially during the holidays. Even Tavern on the Green is gone.
So do you think that some enterprising entrepreneur might very well consider opening up a new ballroom in the old tradition? Maybe not Guy Lombardo, something a little more modern?
We can only hope. I think it would be great. So this year, though, I am having just a few couples over for New Year's Eve. And then New Year's Day, there is a tradition, quite honestly. My husband makes breakfast in bed for me, and it's always soft scrambled eggs in a double boiler with little bits of goat cheese and smoked salmon, topped with salmon caviar.
Did you give him the recipe?
No. He invented that way of making scrambled eggs where it's almost like a sauce. It's creamy and velvety, and he just pours it over toast. Pretty cool.
This is a holiday that's kind of weird because the only thing that's really associated with it is champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Well, champagne has gotten quite expensive these days. Do you have any thoughts about alternatives?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what I want to share with you today are all kinds of wonderful ideas for very inexpensive, delicious things, drinks included. In fact, just yesterday, I invented a kind of a champagne punch, and I started with Prosecco, which was $11 a bottle, so I think everyone can afford that. To which I added a little bit of Campari. So to a bottle of Prosecco, you would add a quarter of a cup of Campari, a quarter of a cup of orange juice, freshly squeezed orange juice, and 2 tablespoons of Chambord or some kind of raspberry liqueur. And it is so delicious and very inexpensive to make. And it would really be very festive. This way you don't have to spend $60 or $70 for a premium bottle of champagne.
Well, I've always wondered about those people who use a really expensive champagne for something with orange juice.
Yes. I agree.
Prosecco
with you.
is good enough.
It really is, or some cava from Spain. You know, there are just so many alternatives today. It's great.
Do you associate any foods?
Yes.
With champagne?
Yes. You can go in either direction: sweet, salty, savory. So some thoughts are, I invented this nut. I use pecans or walnuts. And I saute them in a little bit of butter and then add a lot of Thai fish sauce. And you cook it on top of the stove for just a couple of minutes until the nuts are really well coated. And then you stick them in the oven for about 10 minutes. And what happens is that the butter kind of saturates the nuts, and the Thai fish sauce is salty. And it also has one of these kind of umami qualities, and people are addicted to it, and they can't quite distinguish that third ingredient.
It's kind of wonderful. Like when you put cayenne or something else on it, only this is harder to identify.
It is. I mean, it's a little bit Worcestershire-like, but it's just got a great after flavor, and you can make them a couple of days before. You leave them in a jar, and you'll want to have some champagne while you're eating these nuts. So that's one very inexpensive. Pecans are expensive. Walnuts are much less expensive.
Well, so the other food that to have. The other food that most people associated with New Year's Eve is caviar, which is prohibitively expensive
yes.
now, and also environmentally not always the best thing to eat.
Exactly. So, I have other thoughts about that. I like caviar a little bit, but sometimes I think one of my favorite foods is smoked salmon. So you can get very expensive smoked salmon, but even inexpensive smoked salmon is something that makes me happy. And I remember many years ago, I thought this was one of the most elegant ways to entertain on New Year's Eve. We had a friend who would buy a side of smoked salmon and would just have that out on a buffet table. And then he would have a huge chafing dish of just very simple tortellini, Alfredo style, actually, just in a very light cream sauce with a little bit of Parmesan cheese and a very simple arugula salad. And when you think about the colors and the textures, and one is the smoked salmon is cold and the pasta is hot, I just thought, and this with some Prosecco was just the loveliest New Year's Eve way to entertain. I also like smoked ham. So I think anyone can do this. You can just go to the store for a 10-pound shank end of a ready-to-cook smoked ham. I think it's about $20, and you can keep it for a week. And you can just do a little bit of a rub with some coarse mustard, a little bourbon, you know, a little brown sugar, some cardamom. Just rub it in, and you roast it for 2.5 hours, and that's it. And then I think it's really lovely to serve it room temperature. Again, with some champagne and little toasts, and it's really a party.
Would you do that whether you're having a big party or just a few people over?
Well, this is very interesting about entertaining. I think there are two schools of thought. You can either make lots of tiny little ditzy things, which is fun, and sometimes I like doing that, you know, where I'll take little cherry tomatoes and scoop them out and fill them with really good guacamole or hummus and put them in little candy paper cups.
But that's labor-intensive.
That is labor-intensive, but it's festive. The other way to think about it is to make big vats of things. For example, that whole ham. Or I might make my now very famous, Bon Appetit said this was the best macaroni and cheese ever, but it's called Pimento Mac. And I might make a huge paella pan full of this really oozy, cheesy macaroni and cheese, which is not expected on New Year's Eve, and maybe do a lentil salad on the side, because that's good luck, and maybe serve that with something unusual, Leonard, but a sparkling Shiraz, a sparkling red wine. And that also goes great with the macaroni and cheese or the ham. Not expensive.
A Lambrusco
is great. That's a little sweeter. But
now, what kind of cheese are you using?
I use several different kinds of cheese in that. A really good sharp yellow cheddar, because the color is important. And I'll add a little bit of creamy gorgonzola and some Parmesan.
My guest is Roseanne Gold, whose latest cookbook is called Radically Simple. It's published by Rodale. And we're talking about entertaining for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And doing it on a budget, because a lot of us have no choice. And some people feel like they have to do something because they feel almost oppressed by the need to celebrate. It can be devastating if you're not invited to at least one party, or if you have a party and nobody shows up.
Actually, that happened to me once. It was many years ago. I think New Year's is a confusing time, but there's no reason why you can't even just invite a few people over and call it a party. Another thing I love doing is grissini, these very, very slender breadsticks. If you just buy some even domestic prosciutto and wrap a grissini with a piece of prosciutto, and you can put them tall in a tall glass, they look very pretty. And then recently I invented something called a dry cherry roasted pepper tapenade. And this is so delicious. And you can start with jarred peppers, jarred red peppers. You drain them, pat them dry in your food processor. You mix them up with dried cherries or cranberries, good Parmesan cheese, walnuts, a little bit of garlic, olive oil, and it is delicious. And the sweetness and the saltiness of the prosciutto are just fantastic.
When you say you invented something, mm-hmm. what does that mean? Are you drawing upon earlier recipes and thinking of alternatives, or are you just starting from scratch the way a composer might and putting some notes on a piece of paper?
Wow. I really love that music analogy because I used to be a musician, and I really do think a lot about music. It informs my work quite a bit. Again, with my whole three-ingredient paradigm, I really thought about those recipes, three-ingredient recipes, like a chord of music, three notes. Now that I'm cooking more radically simple, which means more ingredients, but kind of a trade-off of ease and time, I do invent, and it's a little hard to describe how it's done. Almost like a jazz musician might have difficulty describing exactly what the process is. But Leonard, I really, over the years, and I've been cooking for 35 years, have truly invented hundreds, if not thousands, of recipes. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. Everything has an origin. You know, tapenade is not something I invented. The notion of using dried cherries and roasted peppers together might be a unique flavor combination.
Well, you became known when you were the personal chef to Mayor Ed Koch,
yes.
who loves Chinese food.
Yes.
And Chinese food is often made that way, isn't it? A Chinese chef will have a lot of different ingredients laid out in front of mm-hmm. him, and then he'll just start putting different things into the wok, and out comes this incredible dish if we're lucky.
Well, I think there's a lot of knowledge that goes into that perfect balance and harmony of all of those ingredients. It's funny. It's the one thing, it's the one cuisine I really know little about and don't know how to cook at all. The best I've done is start to incorporate some Asian flavors into my cooking. For example, one hors d'oeuvre that is wonderful for New Year's is scallops. It's kind of tucked inside a scooped out shiitake mushroom. Just roasted in the oven and then topped with an Asian-style pesto. And that is wonderful and very sophisticated.
When you come up with these recipes that use three ingredients or are radically simple, as your latest cookbook suggests, are you looking at more complex recipes from the past and thinking, what can I leave out or what can I do that will give me as much oomph without having to stick in all of that stuff? Because sometimes I'll look at a recipe that looks really great, and then I'll realize I have to go out and buy two-thirds of the spices because I'll never use those spices again.
Right, it's true.
And there are a bunch of other ingredients that I might not use, and the whole thing just is so complicated. And in the end, the result isn't all that much better from something that is really simple, but just uses the best ingredients.
Exactly. I think it is about the best ingredients, and I really do address that issue. If I introduce a new spice or condiment or some new ingredient in my book, I'll make sure to use it several times so people don't have the feeling that they've gone out and bought it and will never be used again. So I give different examples of how to use something. With the 1-2-3 series of cookbooks, in that way, I really wanted to get down to the primal flavors of things and unique flavor combinations. Now I'm a little bit more doing kind of more of a jazz thing, but I really think of myself as a bridge between the restaurant kitchen and the home cook, because a lot of the thinking is more restaurant oriented than home cooking. But my goal is to tell people that they can do it at home and show them a very simple way how.
This grows out of your experiences that you referred to later as chef director of the Joseph Baum and Michael Whiteman Company.
Yes.
There were a number of different restaurants, just the Rainbow Room.
And still today, continue to consult all over the world. Right now we're working on some hotels in India. We travel a lot, and I like to bring the world flavors to my audience, and those would be the people who are reading my cookbooks or reading my articles. For example, I learned about a sauce, and this would also be wonderful for New Year's Eve to go with some chilled shrimp. It's called guasacaca, and it's a Venezuelan green sauce, and I had it in this restaurant in Connecticut, and I was addicted to it, and I had never heard of it before, and I had never seen it.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I'm a bit afraid to even try to say that word, guasacaca,
to my guest.
Hey, have some guasacaca. My guest is Roseanne Gold, whose 12th cookbook is Radically Simple, published by Rodale. It was named one of the most important cookbooks of the last 25 years by Cooking Light magazine. Stay with us for more. We're back with Roseanne Gold, whose latest cookbook is Radically Simple, published by Rodale, her 12th cookbook. And we're talking about celebrating the New Year. There are two separate things we mentioned earlier. There's the New Year's Eve party, and then there's New Year's Day. And a lot of people prefer having people over on New Year's Day.
It's interesting. It feels like one big celebration, doesn't it, with no distinction. But for New Year's Eve, I do tend to do smaller kind of hors d'oeuvre things, maybe with one centerpiece. But for New Year's Day, I love the idea of doing a big pot of espresso bean chili, maybe over some white polenta. I might do my 18-hour pork shoulder that's been in the oven from the night before, so the house smells like heaven. It's rubbed with cumin and fennel seed and garlic.
And you leave it on while you're asleep?
18 hours. Yeah, it's fun. You wake up in the morning and there's dinner. sometimes I just buy a really good quality smoked turkey. You know, I love turkey. And you can jazz it up by not doing the typical kind of cranberry sauce, but I make actually a cranberry salsa that's done with fresh lemon and lemon rind and apple. And it's very kind of spicy and tangy, and it's just a lovely thing to do. I think this is a holiday that's really less about the food. And there are some traditional, as we said, ingredients, caviar, shrimp, smoked salmon, maybe filet of beef that tend to go with New Year's, but it's really more about inviting people into your home and really celebrating and kicking off the New Year.
Do you like the inexpensive caviars?
I happen to really like salmon caviar, you know, that kind of big, fleshy, red stuff. Not the tiny little granule ones, but the little...
The big, eggy, sacky-looking,
yes. I do like that, and that's what I get on top of those birthday scrambled eggs in the morning. I think that's quite good. And I like oysters, and we'll probably have some oysters this New Year's.
Well, you don't have to cook those, but
that's correct.
Some of the recipes we are discussing will be posted on our show page at WNYC.org, the ones that are from this cookbook.
And some others. I'm going to share some others with you. Sometimes it's also just about introducing your guests to some just new flavor combinations. For example, I believe everyone now can get those wonderful fleshy medjool dates. And you can just put those out with very thin slices of aged Gouda cheese or even manchego. So you have this kind of sweet and salty, and just when you pop them both in your mouth together, it's just fantastic. And again, that with any kind of sparkling wine would be great.
Well, you can't go wrong with something like that. But people are afraid to try out recipes for the first time when they're having a bunch of people over.
I agree. That can really be a disaster. It's happened to me, too.
So you think that you should make things that you've made in the past? At least try them out once before?
Things that feel very, very comfortable. But, you know, Leonard, I think it's every cookbook author's real nightmare is that you can create a recipe and make it time and time again, and then you make it when your company's coming over and something goes wrong. And I have to tell you, it happens to all of us. That's just the inevitability of cooking, and probably one of the reasons I don't like baking that much. There's just no room for error.
What happened to you? Obviously, you have some horror stories to tell.
I do. One just the other day, I had some company coming for dinner, and one of the recipes in my book, I don't know what it was. I think maybe the onions were too watery, or they just didn't caramelize, and oh my goodness, it was really, I didn't know what to do.
Or you forget, and something's in the oven a little longer than it should have been. You forgot to put on the timer.
That's right.
Then there's the whole awkwardness of cooking when people arrive.
Okay, so here's my pet peeve. Leonard, this is what I really hate. I haven't mastered this. You know, I used to write a column for Bon Appetit called Entertaining Made Easy, and I would usually say, who's kidding who? I mean, you know, even making coffee for 10 people is a drag. I do not like being the cook and the guest. I find it very difficult. I don't have a kitchen where I can see my guests. So, I mean, some people do. They have open kitchens or pass-throughs or windows, and that's a little better. But the transition of cooking and making sure everything's really right, and I also care a lot about presentation, so I'm really in there at the last minute doing things. And then segueing into the dining room where people are having interesting conversations, I find that very, very difficult.
So how do you handle it?
Well,
I mean, you can't, unless you can afford to have somebody do it,
right.
Prepare the food at the end and bring it in. You're stuck with going back and forth, aren't you? And you,
yes.
you walk in and you bring this food and there's this interesting conversation that you hear other people engage in. You want to join them. At the same time, you have to run back into the kitchen
exactly.
and get some more food.
So here's my New Year's resolution. Honestly, I do want to entertain more. And I want to find those 6 to 8 dishes that really can be done ahead of time, that can be just put on the table where I don't have to do that, and maybe not be and be a little less self-conscious about how the food tastes per se.
So does that mean stuff that tastes good at room temperature, or stuff that has been cooking all along? All you have to do is go out and put it on plates, and it'll take you five minutes to plate it.
Kind of scoop and serve some, as I mentioned, that delicious chili or something. Bigger things like a whole roast side of maybe salmon. Oh, this is a wonderful idea for New Year's. Let me share this with you. If you buy a side of salmon, and salmon is not so expensive. I mean, you can get farmed, you can get organic, but you can even get it at the supermarket. But this is such a great way to make it. Do you know those wasabi peas that you find in bags now? It's really like a snack. If you crush them and pack them on top of a side of salmon, and so the whole top is covered, looks very festive, and drizzle a little olive oil and put the zest of a lime onto all over that and stick it in a hot oven, 400-degree oven for about 20 minutes, you have the most succulent, delicious salmon, because what happens is that the crushed wasabi peas become a crust and they lose their hotness after they're cooked. And I might do that with just some very lemony mashed potatoes and a beautiful salad. You see, that's an example of just putting it out there.
But you're not slicing it the way you would lox.
No.
Suddenly
no,
it becomes
something else.
This is now
really like a roast salmon. This would be more of a main course kind of thing. But you just put it. Yeah, I think rather than doing lots of small things, I'm going to opt for things in big pots, big sides of things, kind of the food you can slice.
We were talking about inventing things. I suspect you invented that as well. But
I
one
did.
Of the ones we're all in my office most curious about is your almost confit chicken thigh recipe.
Mm.
How did you come up with that?
Let's see. We've been buying a lot of chicken thighs because we go to Costco. And it's a very nice product that they have. Love garlic. And once upon a time, my husband used to make duck confit all the time, which is a very labor-intensive dish.
And in its purest form, it takes a long time.
It has
the duck sits in duck fat. For it can be months if you're really doing it in the old-fashioned way.
That's exactly right. So then it's seasoned, then it sits, and then you cook it ever so slowly in its own fat, and then it congeals, and then you cook it again, and it's really quite a thing. Then he switched to doing it with chicken, and that was lovely, but also very labor-intensive. So there's the thread. And then I decided I was going to try a method of making chicken with the thighs and lots of garlic and some of the same spicing. You use something called quatre épices, which is a French for four different spices, some fresh thyme, some bay leaf. And it's so succulent. And then you kind of crisp it up at the very, very end. So it has a sensibility of confit. And so I call it almost confit.
Have you, I'm sure you've been to other people's parties. Do you prefer to have your own, or do you like going to somebody else's where you don't have to do
any
work?
That's the magic question. I love going to other people's houses. It doesn't matter what
they... But do people expect you to have one because you cook so well?
you know, I do so much cooking for work. Again, I do a lot of magazine writing, et cetera, books, projects, that it's hard to cook for pleasure. Again, another New Year's resolution is just to let go of some of that and start just enjoying the cooking process. But it goes back more to what I was saying about being the guest and really being engaged in conversation. If I go to someone else's house, I can sit and listen or talk, which is really my favorite thing to do.
This time of year, most of the stuff you find in the farmer's market is root vegetables. You have something nice and simple and easy to do for a party?
With root vegetables, yes. One of my favorite things, and you can even serve this as an hors d'oeuvre if you really have guts, but I love parsnips. And if you slice them about a half an inch thick, obviously peel them, slice them, and steam them, they taste like candy. You can drizzle a little extra virgin olive oil over them, some grated lemon zest, and some coarse salt, and you can actually even serve that with Prosecco. That would be a really awesome New Year's Eve for a vegetarian.
That would be
a little hors d'oeuvre.
But what about desserts? Some people aren't sure whether you should even have desserts when you're having a big party like that.
Oh, dessert. Oh, you mean dessert on New Year's Eve. Oh, you
no,
have
do
to
you
have
need
dessert.
It? Well, New Year's Day you might have dessert, but
yeah,
by the time
have
the dessert
chocolate.
Comes out, you're wishing that those people would leave already.
Well, that might be so. I think you need to have something. Sometimes just little cookies can be really lovely. I do a cookie with Nutella, which has become sort of famous. It's four ingredients and in the book and very simple, but I'll be happy to give it to you for the website.
Mm. Nutella is really popular in France.
Yeah, and Italy too.
I noticed.
And now it's popular in Brooklyn.
Is it?
Yes.
In Paris, they have these crepe shops that everything is Nutella and something.
Yeah, it's a great ingredient to play with. You know, it's that chocolate hazelnut delicious flavor combination. So it's a little sandwich cookie that's made with the Nutella as a base. I always make lemon buttermilk sorbet or ice cream or whatever you want to call it because the base of it is buttermilk. It is such a refreshing thing to have. And Leonard, I call this my adult sundae, but I take fresh strawberries, and I do serve this for New Year's. Fresh strawberries, mix it with a little bit of sugar and grappa. And then I top it with a scoop of homemade lemon buttermilk sorbet and a little bit of fresh basil on top. And the flavor combination is so wonderful and very refreshing and looks festive too.
Now, you began your career at 23, mm-hmm. right? What had you been doing before that?
Well, I was in graduate school in human sexuality. I majored in psychology and education in college, and then I was in graduate school and decided I liked food better.
Well, when you saw Tom Jones, the movie of Tom Jones, where food and sex were somehow intermingled.
They're always linked. Yeah, but food won out in my life. My parents were shocked, of course, when I told them I was dropping out of graduate school to go cook for nothing. But what an exciting time that was. It was in the late 70s. It was really the beginning of the food revolution. And who knew that it would go where it went? It's astonishing.
Do you ever get stressed out these days?
When
you're having a party?
Yes. Always. There's hardly a time that I don't. I think, you know, I do feel a lot of pressure. I feel there's a lot of expectation. Again, I'm trying to let go of that. And Leonard, I'm now a student, actually. I'm in school in a class called Foundations in Buddhist Contemplative Care. I am a hospice worker. I work in an emergency room, and I'm learning how to not be so stressed.
Were you really stressed when you worked for Ed Koch? First of all, how did you get that job? You were very young at the time,
weren't you? I was very young.
And you didn't cook Chinese food?
No, exactly. I was working, believe it or not, for Mayor Wagner, if anyone even remembers.
Of course.
At his law firm. And it was at a time that corporations and law firms were starting to have their own in-house dining rooms. And I was cooking for Mayor Wagner there and found out that Ed was looking for a chef. Again, he was just a single man without a wife living at Gracie Mansion. And someone would have to do the parties and do the dishes. And that was me.
And did you feel you were young at the time?
Yes.
And you didn't have meditation to help you with the stress.
No. You know, looking back on that, I'm not even sure how I really got through that. Yeah. It was a very exciting time. It was a very difficult time, and a stressful time.
Well, when you cook for somebody in that kind of capacity, you really have to keep two things in mind, don't you? First of all, you have to cook things for official dinners, and then you have to be aware of what the boss likes. And we've heard all sorts of horror stories from the White House over the years where chefs came in with very fancy ideas, and then all the president's family would be hamburgers.
Mm-hmm, that's true. I've seen some of those menus. Ed was very easy to please. His favorite food was, next to Chinese food, was garlic. So I knew that if I made anything with garlic, he would like it. He was a very appreciative man.
And then when did you start writing the cookbooks?
The cookbooks started in 1993. My first book was actually called Little Meals, A Great New Way to Eat and Cook, and that started the whole grazing craze.
Well, you were making those little meals
for the Rainbow Room.
For the Rainbow Room.
It was a wonderful concept at the Promenade Bar. It was called Cocktails and Little Meals, and that whole kind of coupling of food and drink really changed the way people started eating. You know, the whole tapas and small plates things really began then. And so I would say in the early 90s, I started doing cookbooks.
And then simplicity became the main theme, three ingredients.
Yes.
Plus, well, it's not really three ingredients. It's three ingredients plus salt, pepper, water, anything else?
No.
That's it?
That's it. In my book. Other people have their own kind of versions of that. But you know what was so important? It wasn't even so much the three ingredients. It was just the beginning of a new way to think about food and cooking. Because you know, if you looked at a menu at that point in time, they read like shopping lists, and food was becoming so overwrought that it was just my way of making it acceptable to cook more like a French or an Italian cook. Their food, believe it or not, tends to be much more simple than some of ours.
Has this affected the way you stocked your kitchen? Or do you still have the cardamom and all of the other things that you probably rarely use?
I have a lot of spices. Again, I'm always experimenting and playing, so maybe I have a little bit more than the average person. But, you know, I live in a simple kitchen, too, Leonard. No dishwasher, no microwave. You know, I like it simple.
You have a daughter, and having a party that runs into the late night can be a problem when you have a child.
Well, she's great in the kitchen. You know, we actually wrote a book together called Eat Fresh Food, Awesome Recipes for Teen Chefs. And she can be very helpful when she wants to. Hopefully,
when she wants to.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that night she'll be at a friend's house.
I see. Well, Radically Simple, your latest cookbook, as I said, has just been named one of the most important cookbooks of the past 25 years by Cooking Light magazine. Also write a column for the Huffington Post.
Yes, that's fairly recent. I'm having a lot of fun doing that.
Is your daughter open to a lot of different things?
Some
kids will only eat three things.
Leonard, this was very, very exciting. Shana had her first shrimp the other night, and the only way she could have it, because she doesn't eat fish at all. She just won't eat fish. It makes us crazy. So I said, and we had company, and I made her do it in front of the guests. I said, Shana, if you dip this chilled shrimp in Peter Luger's steak sauce, which she adores, I said, will you try it? And she did, and she swallowed it, and she had another. So that's real progress. So if you don't know what to have for New Year's Eve, maybe, and you don't like fish, try some chilled shrimp with Peter Luger's steak sauce.
Were you a picky eater when you were a kid?
No. No, I ate too much when I was a kid.
Well, you've remained svelte, so... You figured it out in more recent times. Some of the recipes that we've been discussing will be on our show page at WNYC.org. And Roseanne, thank you so much for coming by again.
Thank you, and happy
talk
New
with us.
Year.
Oh, same to you.
Thank you.
I hope you're going to be celebrating with some pretty nice food. I may stop by.
I would love it.